You and I back together again Tuesday, December 5th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We feature our weekly check-in with Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio, this time on a move by progressive Democrats at the state capitol to increase state spending. Quinnipiac University anthropology professor Dr. Hillary Haldane talked about recent revelations of rape being committed in the Israel-Hamas war.
Ah, yes, it's the fourth hour. It's 5 o'clock. So the bar is open, just kidding, although I keep asking the boss, can I have just a little mix set up over there? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Back to open phones in just a few. And by the way, if you missed Lisa Wexler's full one-on-one, one-hour interview with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim earlier today, check it out on our webpage, not our Facebook page, but go to the WICC webpage at WICC600.com. Scroll down. You'll see Lisa and the mayor standing there. Click on it, and you can listen to that. I will have segments of that coming up once again before we wrap up at 5:45. This afternoon, Megan Portfolio joining us for her usual Tuesday appearance. She writes the Hartford Portfolio blog column at the Yankee Institute. Megan, hi. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Hey, did you just say you're getting a bar at the studio? Because I want to have to start coming in.
Well,
to do
yeah.
These
you know, I've got plenty of room here, and I keep telling the boss, and I kind of get the eye roll when I, because you know, I guess there's a machine, Megan, like a Keurig for coffee, that makes mixed drinks. Have you seen this thing?
I don't know, but I'm Googling it right now. Just kidding.
I think everything is powdered, and it says just supply the alcohol. Okay. Hey, Megan, interesting here. We've kind of got dueling positions on this. I see a piece here that all of a sudden there's a little bit of rumbling at the state capitol about, hey, a lot of the surplus money was all peachy keen when we had it. It's eventually going to go away. And now there are rumblings, never fails, Megan, in the General Assembly, which is the subject of your piece, that even though, you know, good times aren't going to last forever, there are voices to increase spending again at the General Assembly.
Yeah, and I apologize to your listeners. Hopefully this isn't too boring of a topic, but it's super important because each one of us taxpayers would have to pay $50,700 to pay off all the debt that we have accrued over the years.
Yeah.
And suddenly lawmakers want to start spending money like drunken sailors again.
So, I mean, why? Now, who is this? Who's making the noise here? And what is the rationale here? Because, Megan, I never thought I would see the day, and we're currently in the middle of it right now, where we have a governor, a Democrat, majority Democrats, and the Republican caucus all saying, hey, we may have gotten our priorities right finally on this. So who's rustling the covers on this?
So this would be the Tax Equity Caucus. Which was founded by a Hamden representative, Josh Elliott.
Yeah.
And he's not happy with all the excess money we have been bringing in being used to pay down the unfunded liabilities. Mm-hmm. And he would rather, you know, that money be used for all, you know, his little programs. He didn't really specifically say which programs, but coming from the progressive wing, it's just basically any freebie that you can imagine.
And I know I can understand because I can guess on this, Megan, and they pretty much said it. They're not real big fans, at least this part of the Democratic Party in Hartford. They don't necessarily love Governor Lamont specifically for that. Anytime most of them say, hey, it's time to raise this tax or that fee, you know, as liberal as the governor is on social issues, money-wise, he's like, well, no, we're not going to do that because that's the wrong message.
Yeah, I got to give it to the governor. He's been right on with this and trying to maintain some fiscal responsibility. I mean, we're basically second to the bottom of all states with outstanding debt. So Governor Lamont is trying to be fiscally responsible as possible. And he's had the backing of other leaders in the Democrat Party, like the Speaker of the House, Matt Ritter. He's been kind of a fan of keeping these guardrails in check. But, you know, think about it. We didn't have the guardrails before, and look where it got us.
Yeah.
The second worst debt in the country. So I'm like, why would we want to go back to those old ways? It's insane. But it's funny because these same people that are calling for, you know, increased spending, you know, to paying with it with, you know, taxing the rich. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear a peep from them when they were passing the almost $2 billion CBAC contract a few years ago. You know, state workers are getting $3,500 in bonuses, raises, step increases. Some even got 15 months, got like a 20% mm-hmm. pay increase. So I didn't hear anyone on the government end trying to like rein in their expenses. So why are you coming back at us again for more money?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, Megan, look, and I understand there is a concern of a lot of progressives about social spending. And there should be there. Megan, I've always said I'm not going to be a guy that comes on here and says, no, get rid of all these programs, because you can't, because that's impractical, because it doesn't work. But the same thing being, we do need a workable, reliable safety net that provides proper service without just going like all index card here and saying, well, hold on, let me pull this one out. Oh, tax the rich because we have to spend more. Because, you know, and we've seen these figures, Megan, you and I, something like the top 5 or 6% of wage earners in this state pay an incredible share of taxes. I mean, if Fairfield County didn't exist, there'd be a black hole here in this state.
Oh, I know. Thankfully, there is a Fairfield County, because I don't want to be the Fairfield County, because if they don't exist, they're coming for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So is this just wishful thinking? I mean, you know, Megan, this is an election year. They're not. I mean, can you even envision them introducing tax increases or fee increases or more spending in 2024 when, you know, the 151 of them in the House and the 36 in the state Senate are up for re-election in a little under a year?
Oh, they'll definitely bring it up. They bring it up every year, mostly from people that are in really safe areas. You know, a lot of the cities where a lot of them run unopposed. So a lot of them aren't scared. So they will bring this stuff up. And this is typical of this far, you know, left wing. They just, you know, they keep trying. They're pretty persistent. They'll try and try and try until they get it, just like they did with the, you know, the minimum wage increase, the paid family medical leave. They'll just keep trying until they get their way.
And finally,
they're persistent.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of wages, Megan, I don't know whether you saw this, but a story came out today. The Labor Committee is again going to try, even though they get pushback on it from people who make more money the way it is. I see they're going to try and get rid of the non-tipped wage again in Connecticut, because, of course, we, Megan, can't let people make their own decision as to say, you know, OK, I'll make a smaller minimum wage because I make boku bucks in tips, because, of course, the Labor Committee has to do away with that. This stuff is mind boggling. It really is.
Yeah, what was interesting about that is they bus in or flew in all these people from Chicago. I'm not sure on whose dime. You can't even compare Connecticut. You know, we have awesome restaurants in Connecticut. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love our Connecticut restaurants. But you're comparing like one of these major metropolitan areas to Connecticut. Like, it's apples and oranges. And what also is interesting is here comes big labor. I saw them speaking up because they're just salivating for more, you know, unionized members and more dues money. So I was like, give me a break, guys.
Yeah, hey, why don't we fly in leftists from Chicago? That's always worked, right? Hey,
I'm San Francisco. Let's bring in San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm surprised the leftists in Chicago were able to get out because of all the stray gunfire out there. I'm just, you know. Megan, thanks. Check her stuff out. The Hartford Portfolio, Megan Portfolio, the Yankee Institute. Megan, thanks. We'll chat next week. Take care.
All right. Have a good week.
Bye. All right. Thanks. There you go. Megan Portfolio. I mean, come on. Stop. We'll get into this. We'll get into more of this tomorrow. Here's a big, long story here. You remember this last legislative session? Julie Kushner and all the leftists who run the Labor Committee. Connecticut has an option. If you work for a restaurant, this has been going on for decades, right? If you're a server, a waiter, a waitress, server, whatever you want to be, I guess you have the option in Connecticut of you can work for far less of what's our minimum wage now? $15, $16 an hour, whatever it is. You can work for what they call the untipped minimum wage, which is $6 and change. But again, a lot of people like that because they make more money in tips. Because a lot of people like you and I, I'm a pretty good tipper. I do 15 or 20% all the time. All the time. Specifically because I know that the server who may be serving me with a smile and a twinkle in her eye. No, serving me. I say to myself, be good, Paul, because she may be making the untipped wage. So a lot of leftist union people and, you know, people who read Chairman Mao every... I'm kidding. It's just a joke. Sort of. But you know what I mean. They're part of this one wage thing. Oh, and by the way, you do know that in Connecticut, if you make the tipped minimum wage and your end of the week or end of the night or end of shift tips don't bring you up to the minimum, the restaurateur, they have to compensate that for you. So you're making the higher minimum wage anyway. But that's not good enough because these, again, I can only say uber progressive leftists, look it up, on the state labor committee, they don't want to give employees a choice. Well, Paul, what if they don't make enough tips to make the minimum wage? No, then it is incumbent on the business owner by law to make sure you walk out of there at the end of your shift or at the end of the day or end of the night or end of the morning as if you have paid minimum wage. See, the goal of this bill is to actually hurt waiters, wait staff, men and women who wait on us in restaurants. It's to hurt the ones who make big money. Now, they'll never tell you that. But why would you do something that could have... Now, you may say, well, what's the point, Paul? Why not? Because I'll tell you why. Because people are smart. Now, I'm not saying I would ever do this. But you know that if it gets around that there's no more untipped wage, and we'll get into all this tomorrow a bit further because I'll read you quotes from the story. But if there are some people, doesn't mean they're bad people, right? But and maybe you may fall into this category. That's okay. I'm not going to judge you. Not on the radio anyway. Off the radio, what a cheap SOB. No, seriously. There are people who are going to say, well, you know, I used to tip well, but now I hear they all make the higher minimum wage, so I'm not going to. Now, there will be people like that. And some of these restaurant folk and waiters and waitstaff, they know this. They know their customers. They know their clientele. I go to a particular chain restaurant in my town once a week, either Saturday night or Sunday night, have a little something to eat, talk some sports, and the same people have been waiting on me there for like 6 or 7 years. So they know exactly what I want. They know what kind of drinks I want when I walk in, and I tip them well. Because I know some of them may be on the untipped wage scale, but, you know, with the tips going down there, they make pretty good. But again, some of the far leftists in the General Assembly don't want to give those people a choice. Because I know for a fact. I've talked to people. They like making a lower minimum wage because they make boku bucks on tips. And there will be some people who are going to say, well, hey, I read in the news all you folks make $16, $17 an hour now. I'm going to cut down on my tip. It's just human nature. All right. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for hanging out. We're here every Monday through Friday, 2 to 6, to chat about whatever is going on in the news, good, bad, or indifferent. Don't forget, coming up tonight at 6, it's News 8, the audio simulcast of News 8. Best of Melissa in the morning at 6:30. And then tonight, Lars Larson on the overnight Red Eye Radio. Melissa in the morning tomorrow at 5. Lisa Wexler back at 10 tomorrow morning. And by the way, if you miss the excerpts of Lisa's extended interview with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim, I'll be replaying those again later on in the show. And or you can go to our website, WICC600.com, and you can scroll down and you'll see Lisa standing there with the mayor, all smiles against the ICC backdrop. Just click on that and you can listen to her interview as well. All right. And following Lisa every Monday through Friday, it's Eric Erickson from noon to just horrible things coming out of the Israel-Hamas conflict, and I spent a good time yesterday talking about the release of video and photos about the atrocities being committed by the Hamas terrorists, the militants here, and we're getting graphic, and it was even tough for me to read on the air, graphic depictions of rape here. Rape in wartime, apparently, tragically, as reprehensible as that is nothing new. And to talk about that and more is Dr. Hilary Haldane. She is professor of anthropology at Quinnipiac University. Professor, good afternoon. It's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Boy, I tell you, Professor, these allegations that have come out here, and not allegations, they are on, you know, videos and photos here. As detestable and horrific as rape is, as a crime, no matter when it is, and you couple that with war, and we know that war, any veteran you speak to, man or woman, is not pretty, but these allegations we're hearing here just awful. And I guess it's your line of study that says this is nothing new.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's widespread. We've definitely seen it over centuries, if not millennia. It's used, I guess a good way to say it for your listeners would be, it's not a bug, it's a feature of war and terrorism and occupation.
But it's not... it's rarely mentioned, Dr. Haldane, and when it is, as you pointed out here in the setup for this, a lot of times, sadly, there are some people who you would hope would come out a little more forcibly on this that are kind of mincing their words. And I spent a good time yesterday in one of my monologues saying that in and of itself is distressing.
I agree completely. I would say that when I first learned of the events that were happening on October 7th and, you know, the days that followed, I just assumed that violence in the form of rape and sexual assault had occurred. And I assume that is a feature of really any conflict. And I think that what is disturbing to me is the fact that in many, not just in the current situation, you know, the current stage of the conflict in Israel-Palestine, but we're talking about South Sudan, we could talk about Ukraine, we could talk about Myanmar. Why is it that it takes so long for us to acknowledge that women, children, and men have suffered forms of sexual assault and rape, to dehumanize them, to degrade them, as a part of a conflict? And I think that the other disturbing part is the selective outrage.
Yeah.
You see people who are now asking for people to condemn, as they should, the atrocities perpetuated by Hamas. But many of these politicians and talking heads are people who rarely ever mention their concern for survivors of rape and sexual assault. So I think there's a disingenuous part of it that is as deeply disturbing as the delay it took for people to speak out about these atrocities.
And you know, Professor, what's wrong is wrong, and what's right is right. And I think you have people who come out, and no matter what their position in society is, what party they belong to, what gender they identify as, you gain the moral high ground by coming out quickly and saying, listen, shooting at somebody with a gun is, I guess, quote unquote, an accepted form of war within reason. But the sexual assault and the rape is just not acceptable. The prevarication on this drives me nuts.
Exactly. And I think that's what is the most disturbing part of this, is that you have people who are, and I, you know, like you, I, why are we putting people into camps when it just comes to humanity, right?
Yeah.
So you have people who are willing to acknowledge that Hamas has done these atrocities to people as a part of their assault. But then they won't acknowledge that the Israeli state has also perpetrated rape and sexual violence against Palestinians, and vice versa. You have people who are willing to call out the Israeli government and Israeli military apparatus and prison system as doing this, but then won't hold Hamas to account. So I would say rape is inexcusable. It is a it is a war crime, regardless of who's perpetuating it and who the survivor is. We should be concerned for any survivor and the trauma that they've endured as this form of violence, and not only choose who we're going to validate because they fit our narrative. And that is what is so deeply disturbing about what's on display right now with this particular stage of the conflict.
Dr. Hillary Haldane is the guest. She's a professor of anthropology at Quinnipiac University. Doctor, in your anthropological study, the idea of sexual abuse, sexual crimes, rape in wartime, is this something that unfortunately has been with mankind for millennia here? Is it a kind of evil that has presented itself, whether it's December of 2023 or back thousands of years? What do we know about that? Are there allusions to it in texts and hieroglyphics? What do we know?
Yes, so we definitely know that sexual violence has been a part of what we might call conflict. I think that's probably the best way of putting it, for a long time. In our own country, you can look at the Civil War in when we had the first kind of documentation of an effort to make it illegal, to make it something that would be considered a war crime. So even in our own nation, we acknowledge that it was an unsavory and unforgivable act against innocent people as a part of war, even in our own conflicts here in our nation state. So the issue would be, it's difficult to prevent and work against when you have people who choose to only identify certain victims as legitimate. Mm-hmm. I think that that's why it's so difficult for us to make headway, because we cannot all get on board and just saying it doesn't matter who the victim is, what nation state they belong to, what ethnicity, what religion. Rape as a weapon of war is a war crime. No one should be doing it, and any perpetrator of it should be held accountable, whether they're our ally or not. And the fact that that is such a difficult bar for us to meet is depressing and confounding in this day and age.
Certainly is. And you just mentioned the Civil War. And look, I'm kind of a history buff. You kind of have to be doing the gig I have here. And I can't tell you the amount of documentaries and books I've read and listened to and stuff I've watched online. Yet, I'm sitting here trying to remember, as you mentioned it here, I don't think I have ever heard any mention of rape or sexual assault in the Civil War, in World War One, maybe not up until modern times. Yet you say we have documented evidence that this has tragically been a constant thing.
Yeah, it is astonishing to me that we have not been able to engage with this fact of human behavior. Is it our discomfort with, is it just our moral discomfort with talking about something that we see as sexual in nature? Mm-hmm. We have a very kind of Calvinist, Puritan type of approach to things that we consider sex act. I think that's probably because we haven't done a very good job of saying rape is not a sex act. Rape is an act of domination and power.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a discomfort around it, but also it's because women are the majority victim. We're not very concerned with women as victim. Look at even in our own politics, it takes so much work to get people to believe that something like this has happened to women. If the accused is a member of your political party, Republicans don't want to admit that their people do it, and then Democrats don't want to admit if their members of the party do it. So the very fact that we continue to perpetuate this idea that there are blameless people when it comes to this act is part of what keeps that narrative out of the truth of your history, right? So the Liber Code in February of 1863 already included sexual assault as a punishable act in the Civil War. So why didn't you learn that? Why is the Gettysburg Address important, but this code was not? So I think that's a really important question to be asking of our curriculum as well.
Exactly. And I wonder, Dr. Haldane, what if anything is actually said in plain English you know, from our military commanders who train recruits who say, okay, let's talk about something that you know, is not going to happen, you know, understand. Sad stuff. Dr. Hilary Haldane, professor of anthropology, Quinnipiac University. Dr. Haldane, thanks. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. All right. Yeah, I mean, you would think that commanders and generals and platoon leaders speak with people, Frank, because, listen, I got to tell you something. If I had any man or woman, for that matter, but it's mostly guys. We know about this. If I had any guy under my command who I saw do this, or they told me this happened, guy's getting a bullet in the head. I'm sorry. It just, I mean, come on. Raping somebody as an act of war, that's savagery. Listen, there are rules of war. War is war. But there's stuff you're just not supposed to do. And she's right. You know, if my side is winning, you know, whether it's Democrat or Republican, or whomever you favor in a war, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, who don't want to talk about rape. I mean, look again, and I read this stuff yesterday. Look at Dana Bash. If you missed it, go online. Find Dana Bash from CNN, hardly a conservative, trying to pin down on facts here. Pramila Jayapal, the uber leftist progressive member of the squad there from, you know, Washington State, when, you know, she asked her about, you know, Hamas terrorists raping Israeli women, and you start tap dancing around that. You let go of the word salad. Stop it. You condemn it, unless, you know, part of whomever answers that way is like, well, you know, whatever, because we hate those people. Now, I'm not saying that it, in any way, shape, or form that's acceptable. But remember, you can never really get inside somebody's mind. Much as we try, we can. So once again, a big thanks to Dr. Hilary Haldane. She's a professor of anthropology at Quinnipiac University. In Hamden, or as my father's customers used to say, Amaden.